Greetings and welcome to the fifth installment of our podcast series, The Workforce Lens, brought to you by Tarrant County College in North Texas. I am Shannon Bryant, Executive Vice President for Corporate Solutions and Economic Development, and I will be your host, moderating strategic conversations with employers and economic developers on all things related to preparing and growing the workforce today and the future. Today, please help me welcome our guest, Sean Studzinski, President of Modular Design Plus. Welcome, Sean.
Thank you, Shannon. I'm glad to be here today. Good talking with you.
Good talking to you. So happy to have you here. So let's jump right in. I want to learn more about Modular Design Plus. So your website states that Modular Design Plus is a full-service modular design and prefabrication firm on enhancing the efficiency of building components through modularization. What does that mean? Tell us about the company.
That is a mouthful. So we do a variety of things. Modular Design Plus is a four-year-old company. We are a wholly owned subsidiary of a larger company, Canon Design, which is an architectural and engineering firm, about a 105-year-old company with over 1,200 employees across the nation. We were started about 4 years ago just because of the change in the environment. So what Modular Design Plus, what we've done is we've put together basically an integrated process of design and prefabrication. And what that entails is prefabricated components that we fabricate here in our 100,000 square foot facility right here in Euless, Texas, that are used to go into larger building structures such as, you know, hotels, hospitality, medical centers, healthcare centers, multifamily, mixed use, student housing, and a variety of those. And so we have a variety of different components that we prefabricate. But what's different about Modular Design Plus is we've actually integrated the design portion into it too. So we also have a whole team of architects and engineers that work with the architects and engineers on particular projects to really find and maximize the efficiencies of prefabricated and modular solutions into the building process. And what that does is with prefabricated modular solutions, it really speeds up the process. It can cut down on construction time. It can significantly reduce the amount of labor that's required. And it also provides a much safer environment, a safer productivity, and a higher quality of productivity out of a factory assembly line type of process in the construction market.
Very cool product. I was honored enough to get a tour of your plant and get to see some of your prefabricated hotel rooms. Those were really, really cool.
Absolutely.
So is North Texas your headquarters for Modular Design Plus then?
It is, yes. This is our home base. We have people throughout the nation. We have sales forces in California and up in the Northeast. And then we also utilize our larger parent company as well, who has 20 offices across the nation as well. But this is our headquarters for Modular Design Plus in our primary fabrication plant. You know, we do have an expansion plan. Every 2 to 3 years, we look to build a new facility in different regions of the nation. So within 10 years, our goal is to have approximately 5, possibly 6 factories building around the country so that we can regionally serve pretty much every major market sector in the country.
And how do you go about choosing those particular sites? Is it based on client need in that particular region?
It is primarily on client need and where we see the most growth happening. But it also is also based on the labor force and where we see the strongest labor forces, economically viable real estate, of course, the space. We need large space in order to build what we build. And then, of course, the shipping and logistics needs, you know, located to major highway systems and things such as that. So that's why this here in Dallas-Fort Worth, not only because I live here, but also the fact that it's, you know, really a major hub for the southern United States and is easy to get us to, you know, the West Coast, East Coast in transportation as well, which is an important factor in what we do.
Right. And I'm assuming your major source of transportation is ground transportation. The size of the things that you use. Yes.
Can't fly them. No.
So yeah, they are a little large.
Very, okay. Yes.
Great. So tell us a little bit about the clients that you serve, and what is the typical lifespan of a client relationship for your organization?
Well, we hope for a very long time. So typically what we would be serving, it's anywhere from general contractors, developers, architects and engineers. It really depends, you know, even directly to institutional clients. We contract in a manner of ways. Most right now are in the private developer market just because this is a newer type of delivery process. And so most of them are the private developers, primarily in the hospitality and several in the healthcare, because our parent company is a big healthcare designer. And so that's where it's been serving mostly, but we are tapping into the institutional market, higher education campuses and things of that through public-private partnerships, primarily in student housing is a great facility type for what we produce. So, you know, we're really looking at a variety of different market sectors and what we can provide. And that's part of, you know, the product line that we provide also is providing a variety of prefabricated products that really helps us to expand and provide flexibility in each one of those markets that better serves our customer needs.
So are there any local facilities that you could reference for people to take a look at and understand exactly what this is all about?
I wish I could. That we don't have any local. We do have some that I did as an architect. So on Texas Women's University, the latest student housing up there, there are commons up there that I did as an architect prior to coming onto Modular Design Plus. Okay. And my vice president was the prefabricator in the panelized wall systems, which is a product we provide. So we didn't provide that, but I was the designer and my vice president was the fabricator on that. So it was built with prefabricated panelized wall systems in that. But we do have our first major project going up here in Texas in Waco. And so that's being fabricated in our plant now. And so you should start seeing that going up probably around September, October, and seeing the units being shipped down the highway out of our plant here in Euless.
Great. We'll look forward to seeing that. So you are the president of Modular Design Plus. How long have you been with the company? I know you said you've been in business for 4 years. Have you been there since the inception?
No, I have not. I came on about 2 years ago, okay. And we were working out of primarily doing smaller, what we call non-load-bearing volumetric units, which are bathroom pods, exam room pods, things like that, that are fully finished out rooms that slide into a superstructure, and primarily in healthcare facilities prior to me coming on. And so Brad Lukinick, CEO of our parent company, Canon Design, I've known for quite a while, and he asked me to come over and take a look at what they're doing here and the possibility of being able to expand it into new market sectors and kind of expand the business. And so we were operating out of a smaller facility, about 30,000 square foot out of Kansas City prior to me coming on. And one of the first things I did was I said, you know, we really need to expand our offerings. We need to expand what we're doing, and we need to get into an area with better labor forces. You know, Kansas City is high unionized and labor forces were expensive, and there just wasn't the amount of workforce that we needed to expand into what we're doing now. And so that was one of the first moves we did was, you know, we were now in the process of shutting down. We're running our last project out of that plant now that's being delivered out to Los Angeles. Well, it has been fully delivered now, I should say, in the last couple of weeks. And so that one is shutting down, and we're, you know, opened up this 100,000 square foot facility here last summer. And which you have already toured. And so this expands us into offering, you know, a variety of more products such as the load-bearing and non-load-bearing panelized wall systems, the non-load-bearing and load-bearing volumetric systems, and then expanding into the full load-bearing volumetric systems, which is, you know, full hotel rooms and things like that built that actually go up like Lego blocks. They actually make the structure of the building and they're completely finished out inside with everything in it. So.
Very cool. So being the president, what is the day in the life of your role on the job? What does your typical day look like? Because you're an architect by trade, correct?
Correct, yes. The truth is there's no typical day. Every day is different, but, you know, that's one of the reasons.
Right?
That's exciting. That's one of the reasons I became an architect in the first place, because every project is different. It's always a unique challenge. And so now fully running this company, it's every day is a unique challenge. You never know what you're going to get hit with, whether it's something, you know, to deal with the plant, whether it's your design teams, contracts, business development, looking at different aspects of business development. Where are the regions? What are the different products that we can offer? And then every now and then I get to still do a little bit of design and work with my my design engineer and kind of solve problems. And that's kind of fun when I get to do that. But mostly, you know, it's one of the things where I say I'm an architect, but I haven't done real architecture in probably about 10 years. You know, okay. I've been mostly on the business side of it and business development and running different market sectors for different companies and stuff. And so this one I saw as a real challenge taking this on to, you know, one, because it's a very new type of delivery system that I've had, you know, experience in. Most of my projects over the last 10 or 12 years have utilized prefabrication and modular components in them from the design side. So being able to actually be on the fabrication side and integrate the two processes was really exciting for me. And it still, you know, it still is really exciting as we start to see our first products coming online now and getting produced. And when we start seeing, like I said, the Hyatt Place in Waco going up is going to be really exciting to see that just because it actually creates the structure of the building. And so I think what's really cool is that I'm my kids have come to the plant and my wife and have seen it and I've walked through, you know, the same, you know, modular model prototype that you had walked through. And they always ask me, can we sleep in it? Can we sleep in it? And I said, not yet. So maybe in about a year or so when I take them down to when it's completed down in Waco, we're going to go down there and stay a night or two in it just to see just so they can actually see and say, you know, this is something Daddy built.
There you go. Very so cool. And you can see the fruits of your labor. It is definitely a fascinating thing to look at. So Sean, obviously I'm with the community college, TCC. We're all about education and educating our workforce. As I was doing a little bit of research on you and the company, I noted that you have an industry credential after your name, AIA. And I was just wondering, from an architect's perspective, because I don't know that much about the architectural world, what does this credential mean, and how has it enhanced your skill set and your professional career track for you personally?
Sure. So AIA stands for American Institute of Architects, and so it is the professional institute for registered architects. Basically symbolize that I'm a registered architect. You don't need that credential in order to be a registered architect. Some that are not members just put RA after their meeting. But American Institute of Architects is a group that lobbies for, you know, for architects and for, you know, better needs, better fees, better, you know, anything that would be in favor of architects and the profession overall across the United States and even internationally. And so they're part of a group that actually sets up the educational systems, the registration systems, you know, continuing education systems. You know, they hold an annual conference as well as regular state conferences every year. And so it's a great group to really get together with colleagues and find out what's going on. You know, everyone in architecture is doing something different all the time, you know, all the way from people who do single family residential homes all the way up to massive large developments. And so just to kind of compare notes of what people are doing, what they're seeing in the industry, where they're seeing changes going on, you know. So obviously going into this business, I've had a lot of contacts that I haven't talked to in many years contacting me saying, you know, tell me about this. What is this? You know, we've heard about it, but we don't know much about it. And believe it or not, it's this type of delivery process and design process is the architects have probably the biggest learning curve in it and trying to figure out, you know, how do we design to this? How do we make this work? What's, you know, how do we make this efficient? And that's, I think, what Modular Design Plus adds to it is that we actually provide that service for them. We provide that integration so that there's not as much of a learning curve in understanding that they can design it traditionally and then leave it up to us to really guide them in the process to modularize and prefabricate it.
So the whole credential, the whole industry association, it's all about best practices and all getting together and kind of making sure that everybody is following the same guidelines for their standardization across the industry.
Absolutely. Trying to work with the governments and trying to work with, you know, code compliance and setting codes and construction means and methods and building code compliance across states. You know, that's probably one of the biggest things that's very difficult for architects is that, you know, there's so many ICC, International Code Compliance, is the book that we follow, the International Building Code if you're working commercial, or the International Residential Code if you're working in residential, single-family residential. And every state, and even more so every local jurisdiction, city, or municipality is following anywhere from 2012 all the way to 2021 code. And so it's really difficult. It would be much easier if they were able to actually all get on the latest code or the latest one out there so that when you're working, you know, nationally, it's not as such a process that some are following these older codes, some are following newer codes, and they all have different implications in the design process that makes it very difficult on architects and engineers in working through that.
I'm sure it does. Absolutely. You need some standardizations there.
Standardization would be great.
So, Sean, let's segue just a little bit talking about the employees of Modular Design Plus that you have here in North Texas. How many employees do you currently have?
So we currently are around 50 or 60. And, you know, like I said, we're just at moderate ramp up. We're slowly ramping up to full capacity, which we expect to be later in the fall, especially early next year. And so when we are fully ramped up in our factory, we expect to have probably around 90 to 100 here at this facility. And that's a combination of a majority of those being the factory plant workers that would be the skilled labor and non-skilled labor in the actual fabrication process. And then that'd probably be account for about 70, 80. And then we'd have about 20 to 30 in more of the office architects, engineers, administration, sales force, things like that, that would be in kind of the front office roles. Okay. And then we also have sales teams that we're building up. We have a sales team in California right now, and we're looking at one probably either in the Southeast or Northeast as well, and getting online here pretty quickly.
So you're going to have a ramp up of 90 to 100 here in North Texas across the country for all of the new locations that you're going to be speccing over the next few years. What do you anticipate your growth will be in that area as far as employees across the country?
So excuse me. So each factory would probably be relatively the same size. We'd be looking at about 100,000 square foot, and each one would employ roughly about that same number. You wouldn't have as much of the front office because we'd have most of our executive staff here at this location and most of our design staff. And so we'd have smaller local design teams and coordination teams of engineers and architects. And then, of course, you'd have the same type of staffing in the back as far as area coordinators, plant supervisors, production leads, and then, of course, your skilled and non-skilled labor forces that would be in those. So I would anticipate somewhere around 70 to 80 in each one of those as we expand, and that would be about every we would look to be, based on our current pipeline that we're looking at, we're probably looking at in toward the end of next year of looking at another location, possibly out on toward the West Coast. Along the California border, not in California just because real estate's so high there, but somewhere probably like in Reno or Nevada, somewhere in that area.
Okay, nice. So as the president, tell me a little bit about your strategy of how you go about scaling your workforce according to the business drivers and the demands.
Sure. So we have to maintain a certain level of flexibility in that. And so we have, we try to keep roughly about 50% of our staff is fully trained MD plus employees in the production side of it. And then the other 50% is what we call kind of our temporary staff that we use either temporary agencies or internships or things like that to give people the necessary skills and training and labor force that is more flexible that can we can bring on for a month or two as needed and then, you know, release them for a month or two if we need to, but keeping that base force there for full production. Now, as we continue to grow and stabilize, we expect more of that to be more like a 75 or 80 to 20 split in that, to where we would have probably about 20% of it that would be kind of the temporary force and the rest of it would be full time just based on stabilization in the market sector and growing our business in that.
So you mentioned internships, so you know I'm going to have to ask the question, do you currently have interns or do you have an apprenticeship program that you run through your organization?
So we are working on that. Yes, it's in the development. I know we talked last year, and to be honest, you know, in looking at, you know, our community involvement engagements with campuses like TCC and looking to utilize that workforce, we definitely want to get something in place. That's kind of because of COVID and all that, and you guys were shut down in a lot of areas, and most of our other resources at, you know, UT Arlington, UNT, and all those have really prevented us from being as active as possible in engaging groups like yours and doing that just because of all the restrictions. And so we haven't made much headway in that, but we look forward to that in the coming year to really engage you guys more and see what we can do together to kind of get workforces over there, get internships. And absolutely, we are totally on board with that and getting internships there, whether it's over the summer months or however we need to set that up. We look forward to that.
Right. Well, we absolutely do as well. We're going to be reopening our doors here very soon. And so we look forward to engaging and helping you in any way we can.
Great.
So I know you talked a little bit about the skilled labor that you have at the plant. Can you speak a little bit more specifically to what kind of skill sets you have as far as what the needs are for these types of positions? And where are you currently finding the talent outside of just the traditional temp services?
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, we have anything that you can think of on a traditional construction site, we do in a factory. And so welding, yeah, framers, mechanical, electrical, plumbing, finish workers, gyp, you know, tape and bedding, drywall, tile workers, flooring, anything to do with construction would be kind of the skilled labor sets that we would be looking for. But the benefit of what we do is we don't necessarily have to have, because we are a licensed manufacturer, very different than on-site construction. We don't necessarily have to have licensed plumbers, licensed electricians, all of that. We do in the supervisory roles, but they don't necessarily have to because we are state certified as a manufacturer. So just like think of it like a TV manufacturer or something, everyone building those TVs and there's not a licensed electrician. Mm-hmm. And it works the same for us. You know, of course we go through a very stringent inspection process with a third party state inspection group that's representative of all 50 states. So that allows us to build in all 50 states and ship our product to all 50 states to be built. So what that allows us to do is it actually allows us to hire a, you know, much more non-skilled labor forces and train them in those aspects and get the education that they need that, you know, gives them more flexibility in their career. If they want to stay with us and work in a quality controlled environment and go through that, then, you know, that's certainly their choosing. If they choose to go on and become a licensed plumber, electrician, any other trade, then they can certainly do that as well in working with this. So one of the benefits of what we do is we have in our factory, it's an assembly line process. And so we have 24 stations going all the way from the initial framing through the mechanical electrical plumbing all the way through the finish out and inspections. And so what that allows us to do is we actually, everyone that we bring on, we train in all 24 stations. So they're not only getting the skill set that they may come in with, but they're also learning many different skill sets that gives them exposure to say, hey, I might want to do this or I might want to do that. And the reason we do that is so, you know, because it is kind of an assembly line production process and every project is different. So it's not like you're doing the same monotonous thing over and over. You know, every project's going to be a little bit different, a little bit different design. And so what that does is it gives them that opportunity to learn different trades, but it gives us the opportunity then that if for some reason some, you know, we have several people call in sick from the station, we can just kind of shift some people over from one of the other stations and they already are trained up on that skill set and can do the work as well. And we find that it also provides a higher quality of product at the end of the day. Simply because if, you know, let's say, for instance, I have a framer that one day for a week or two is working over in the finish section and he happens to say, hey, you know, this framing doesn't look exactly straight. He can flag that box and get it corrected. So being trained in all the different aspects, you constantly have vigilant quality control measures because then everybody is always seeing the work of others and can critique it and correct it so that when the product goes out, it's the highest quality that we can provide. But we do have skilled welders. We provide a welding training program. And Ernest Levert, who was actually one of the initial welders who began the welding program for NASA, and he actually created the protocols for welding in space and did initial welding and everything on the original space shuttles and things like that, is actually the guy who actually trained up, you know, our welding staff and our welding crew. So we had that is, you know, something that is really strong for us. And
wow,
then of course,
that's really cool.
Yeah. And then of course, you know, we have licensed plumbers, mechanical guys, electricians, all of that, that also will be training up in all the different stations as well.
Very nice. So it's really good to hear. So it sounds like you really have put together an organic growth strategy for your talent, for your team, as you're not only providing some kind of career pathway for them, but you're really investing in their learning and development and also planning for any kind of cross training of things. That's wonderful. It's nice to hear. Not all companies are like that. So well, kudos to you.
Thank you. Yeah. Our philosophy is if our workforce is happy, then they're just providing a better quality of work and a better quality product in the day that we all benefit from.
So. As I always say, you know, people are our number one asset, and it sounds like you really care and you're really investing in them. So that's wonderful. So speaking of the employees, what is the average age? And I know you said you've been in business for 4 years now, but what is kind of the average age of your employer?
So we see, you know, like I said, we have basically two different categories. We have kind of the front office and executive, which would probably be, you know, 35 to 40 age. And then, of course, the plant workers are probably a little bit younger in the 25 to 30 range. You know, but we do have some older guys back there that, you know, have been doing in the construction business for a long time. And so, you know, I think I didn't fully answer the question earlier. You asked about like, where do we locate a lot of our skilled labor and staff and all that too, other than temp agencies, is we have most of our, like our plant supervisors, our area coordinators who oversee, you know, six different stations each. They all come from the prefabricated modular world. And so they've been working in it in the last 25, 30 years. And so they actually know a lot of the, you know, high quality skilled laborers in the market already that we are bringing over. That, like you said, just see what we've put in place for our workers, what we've, you know, the benefits and things that are above what we're seeing in other plants, and just providing a better quality work environment for them. That's what's attracting them. It's not even the money. It's, you know, we're paying relatively the same, sometimes even lower than some of the other manufacturers in the area. But the benefit, I think, is the fact that we're just providing a different type of work environment, better benefits, you know, paid time off, things like that, that we see are important in this labor force and building them up. Because, you know, while turnover is inherent in this industry, in construction in general, you know, you typically see about a 5 to 10% turnover per week. And, you know, and we're planning for that, but we're going to try to avoid that. Because that kind of turnover, you know, costs money. It costs businesses money. It costs time to retrain. It costs time to get them up there. So providing a work environment that they will like, that they will enjoy and see the benefits of it, we think will give them more respect for themselves, more respect for the job, more respect for what they're doing, which I think is going to be, like I said, beneficial for everyone in the end.
So you talked a little bit about the skills of what you're hiring for today. How do you go about assessing the skills that will be needed 3-5 years from now? Because your industry is ever changing, as most industries are these days, but how does that work for your industry specifically?
It is ever changing. I think it's really just seeing what, you know, you got to have a crystal ball and trying to predict what's out there. The benefit of construction is that, you know, construction is not rocket science. So, you know, we're not seeing massive changes in that. In fact, when we were building our plant, we did a lot of homework, a lot of research in other factories and the way that they're put together. And even, you know, Tesla with Elon Musk, and he wrote an article, I think, early last year, basically talking about automation and, you know, automation robots and robotic welders and things like that, replacing manual labor forces. And as we started to study a lot of this, we saw, you know, these different companies investing tens of millions, sometimes hundreds of millions of dollars into these automation systems. And as we started to research it even deeper and understand, you know, how much, you know, what are the benefits of this, as these companies that build and sell these robotic welders and everything will claim, you know, oh, 50 to 60% more efficiency over manual labor. As we started to dig down into these companies and see what it was more like 10 to 15%. And yet they have this debt, hundreds of millions of dollars sometimes in debt from it. And yet it doesn't give them the flexibility. You know, I think that was one of the biggest problems with Tesla and why they were not profitable for, you know, almost a decade. They couldn't show a profit even though they were selling tons of cars. It was a popular product. It was a great product. But the problem, what Elon Musk finally realized, was that he likes to change his mind. He changes his mind all the time. And so he was constantly going in there trying to make it better. And every time he changed his mind, it cost them, you know, I don't know, a month and a half of shutdown to reprogram all those automated systems. And finally, what he realized was, he said, this automation is not working for the flexibility I want in my business. And he removed most of the automation. And last year, they showed their first profitability in over a decade in the existence of the company, in fact. Because he removed that, he put manual labor forces back in there that gave him the flexibility. And I think that's the difference in what we're building, is we're depending more on the manual labor forces and skilled labor that gives us the flexibility. You know, it's very easy to go back there and say, okay, from design to design to design, I can go back there and teach my team within a day or two what the difference is in this design from the last one they built. And versus having to go back there and reprogram automated machines and all kinds of stuff like that, could take weeks or months to do that and get it right.
It still takes people to reprogram, right?
As it takes people to reprogram, but people reprogram much quicker and they learn much quicker in that aspect of it. And so, you know, that's the route we went, simply from what I talked about at the beginning, is we wanted to give our clients that flexibility of design. We wanted to give them that flexibility to say, we're going to provide a product that meets your design and your critical path of your project, not the other way around, where most other prefabricated modular companies are actually saying, this is what we produce, that you have to design around this and design around our parameters. And very, very few architects in the industry want to hear that. You know, if nothing, you know, architects, we tend to have an ego and want to design what we want to design. But we also want, you know, as an architect, they want to serve their client. You know, if a client doesn't want that, then
you have to customize.
You have to customize. And so, you know, that's one thing that we saw in the industry that we chose to do different and find an efficient manner of doing it. And I think that's what's been very beneficial for us.
Very good. That's great. I love the strategy. Love it. So, Sean, when I was out visiting your plant, you and I were talking as we were walking along, and you mentioned to me that you recently launched a diversity, equity, and inclusion team within your organization. And that obviously is a huge passion of mine. What are the strategic goals and or the primary focus of the company as it aligns with this new team, and how does it fit into your existing workforce culture?
So basically, in everything I've said is what we believe in diversity, equity, inclusion. And what the group, the DEI group, provides is, it provides an either anonymous or a place of, I'm going to call it a place of refuge for someone that doesn't feel something, that doesn't feel comfortable voicing up to me or to, you know, my executive staff issues that are going on. This is a place where they can come and speak freely. They can let us know what's going on, because, you know, obviously running a large company, I can't have my eyes and ears everywhere. I can't see everything or do everything. And so we really depend on this group that's integrated throughout both areas, both the front office as well as the plant staff, to really be able to feel that they can speak freely and tell us what's going on, you know, and let us inform us so that we can make adjustments either to policies or make adjustments to the way that things are running and operated, so that everybody is being provided a fair and equal chance to move up, to improve.
So essentially you're giving everyone a voice.
Everyone's
at the table, it sounds like.
And it's even for things that are not necessarily what's going wrong, but things that we can improve on, you know, providing support in education systems. You know, we're trying to work with the community with the HEB Chamber of Commerce to collaborate. A lot of our workers don't speak fluent English. You know, English is a second language. And so we're providing opportunities for them to, you know, get education in speaking English. A lot of them aren't, you know, highly educated on finance and things that they can improve their own personal lives in. So we're teaming up with local banks in the region and areas to provide them that opportunity, either for education or to provide them the ability to, you know, most of them take their checks and they go down to these check cashing places that take 25-30% of their checks, and they just don't need to do that. And so the banks are helping out in educating them in, you know, just opening a checking account and not having to lose that money and being able to bring that money back to their family and improve their own personal lives. And so those are ways that we're trying to help them, again, just providing those better benefits and show them that we care and that we're, you know, we're looking out for them because they're what creates our business. They're, without them, we wouldn't have the business.
Right. They are the boots on the ground.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. That's wonderful. So I also note from your website, in case you didn't notice, I combed your website quite heavily, that on your website you highlight a lot of industry associations and how your teammates are very active in these organizations. So just to name a few, you mentioned Modular Building Institute, American Institute of Architects, Associated General Contractors of America, and Design Build Institute. If you were talking to a TCC student, let's say in our construction area, and that student was just graduating, we just had graduation a few weeks ago, and they were going to be starting a new job, what advice would you give that student about the importance of joining and actively participating in such industry associations?
Well, much like very early, even back when I was still in school and I was working an internship while I was finishing my master's degree in architecture with a firm. I went to Texas Tech out in Lubbock, and so I was working with a firm out there in Lubbock, and I became a member of the AIA. It's an associate member before you're registered. They call you an associate AIA. And the benefit that I found in doing that was that I was able to get something beyond the theoretical education that you typically get in a college environment or university environment. I was able to get more of the practical experience and knowledge, talking with architects who have practiced for 10 or 20 years that understand, you know, the things that they don't always teach in school. And, you know, what am I really going to expect? What am I really going to see? You know I've got this education. I know that I can do this, but, you know, what can I expect coming out into the real world? And so, you know, that along with my internship, I think was very beneficial early in my career in really bringing me to a next level as I went out and finished my degree and then later on completing my architectural registration, which is a very arduous process in that. I think having that knowledge and knowing what to expect really helps you prepare. It really helps you to see the world in a different light and know what to expect. You know, there were so many architects, colleagues that I graduated with that had not worked any internships or really, you know, collaborated with architects practicing in the industry and, you know, felt, well, hey, you know, I want to get out and I'm going to be published in magazines and on the covers and I'm going to win design awards and all this. And it's, you know, it's just not the reality. You know, there's a very small percentage that do that. And so I think, you know, joining those organizations, you can collaborate with people who are already in the business or have been in the business for a long time and really ask the straightforward questions and get straightforward answers to what you can expect and what can help you in your career path. I was very beneficial to have several mentors that I met and still am in contact today on a regular basis that, you know, still mentor me to this today. And even I mentor them back now in things in their career that, you know, even though they're 10 or 15 years older than me and have been doing it longer, just because we've had different career paths, we've had different experiences. And so we can learn from each other. And so I think that's probably the biggest benefit of finding the organizations and understanding. And I would say join as many as you can, you know, in different areas. You know, you list off those. Like I said, we have a variety of professionals in our company that, you know, come from the general contracting. They come from the prefabricated modular world. They come from, you know, the architectural engineering and design world. And so that's why we're a member of so many different groups because of that. And so as we integrate, then we are able to learn about each other's background and each other's specific profession of where they come from more wholly and understand that. And so it really creates a better homogeneous group and holistic ability to provide better solutions as we collaborate internally with that combination of different backgrounds and seeing it from a different perspective.
Exactly. And it's wonderful for students, right? Because it's not just about the theory. It's about gaining the knowledge and then also learning how to take that and apply it to the skill set and be able to meet other people.
Absolutely. And you can never meet enough people to better your career. You know, no. The more people you meet, you're going to meet some good, you're going to meet some bad. And you just got to be able to filter through that and understand it. And so that's what those organizations really help do.
Right. Learn who your mentors can be. And then, like you said, when you get our age, then we can then reciprocate, right? We can give back because now we can be mentors to those people. So,
like we're doing here today, I hope. I hope this is helping some students.
That's the goal. That's what we're hoping to accomplish here. So Sean, talking a little bit about collaborative partnerships and things, tell us a little bit about some of the key community partnerships of your organization and how has that been a value add? I know COVID aside, right, the past year has been a little bit of a challenge for us, but on a typical day, what kind of collaborative partnerships have you gained since being here in North Texas?
One, of course, is with you in Tarrant County Community College. So we've been very fortunate that, and we hope to do more, here in the future. And so HEB Chamber of Commerce has helped quite a bit in connecting us with, as I talked about, with various banking institutions, financial institutions, some of our suppliers in the area, and even identifying areas of workforce and helping us get the message out there of, you know, the different workforce that we're looking for and the institutions. And then, of course, you know, other institutions like UT Arlington and University of North Texas. UT Arlington has a very strong architectural and engineering group. And so educational program. So, you know, we've been able to coordinate with them and identify, kind of a different path for these individuals coming out. Like I said, this is really the modular and prefabrication is relatively new to the U.S., even though it's been done in Europe for the last 40, 50 years very successfully. It's something that hasn't fully caught on, but is at the cusp of what we think is going to be a very major force moving forward simply because of what we're seeing in the work environment today. It's becoming more and more challenging to create good construction projects. And so this really solves a lot of the issues that we're seeing.
I would agree with you. It's new and exciting for sure. So, well, Sean, we greatly appreciate having you here today. Are there any other thoughts or closing remarks that you would like to share with our listening audience about either you or Modular Design Plus?
Absolutely. Talking to the students, you know, really keep your eyes wide open and look for what you don't have to decide in the first, couple years of your career. Explore and seek out different things. And, you know, we certainly are interested in talking to you. Modular Design Plus is hiring. If you're interested in an innovative career in something that's different than the traditional construction method, we are hiring now. So please go to our website, www.modulardesignplusallspelledout.com, and look for opportunities there. And feel free to reach out to us. And like we said, Shannon, we'd love to have some of your students over and see what's going on at the plant and tour. And if they're interested in exploring it, you're welcome to come by. We're just 10 minutes down the road.
All right, Sean, thank you so much. We really, really appreciate your time today. And to our listening audience, thank you so much again for attending the 5th episode of the Workforce Lens. And we look forward to seeing you next time. Thank you.
Thank you, Shannon.